everybody, and yes, it is everybody's favorite day of the week, day number four with the man, Mr. Frank Scalish. Frank, how you doing, man?
I'm doing really good. You know, I think my wife has the heat on this house burned the hell out of Frank, because I am this house is like a sauna.
Well, that's toasty. Good, because I asked Jeffries if he could feel his fingertips about 5 minutes before we went live, because he's got this thing at a toasty 52.
That's not true. It's at 62.
See, but I actually want it cool and cold when I do this, because I get animated and then I get hot. And now I think this, you know, sweatshirt was a bad choice.
A little steamy, man. You need a towel. You're gonna have to towel off, man.
I know, it's a bad choice.
too much intensity on day four for Uncle Frank. All right, what are we gonna talk about? And then once you tell the listeners and the viewers what we're gonna talk about, I have a business question. And then we'll dive into your stuff. Okay, Frank, what are we going to talk about?
Okay, so by popular demand, and when I say popular demand, I mean I got blown up on DMs over this. Flash Mob Junior time. So I'm going to try to narrow it down as quickly as I can. The fastest way to isolate winter holding areas on any lake. So, I'm going to give you guys some really quick, good information with maps, but the maps will not have lake names on them, because I arbitrarily took a few lakes and just picked sections of the lake that I would hone in on.
Okay.
And so I'm going to show you, and when you see the map work, you guys can do this before you ever leave the driveway. It'll be
very nice. Yeah, very nice. It's good to have Matt in studio today. Normally he's in Tulsa, but since we didn't have a show yesterday, I was like, dude, you got to come in studio.
All right. Love
it. It's worth it, because I got to see a preview of Uncle Frank's video, which is, wait till you guys see Frank's video.
We'll just wait on
Uncle that. Frank is out the window. Picasso is now.
It's here. Right here.
Hey,
turning the knobs.
You'll see what we're talking about once the video pops up. It is.
All right.
That had to take more work than just block it. It's hard to explain.
Never mind.
We'll see it, though.
Yes.
The focus needs to be on the fish, though.
Exactly. Yes,
and I was just going to say how I love having Matt in the studio as well, but now I think I'm going to change my viewpoint.
All right, man. Real quick. This is just a real quick. I just wanted to get your thoughts on this, and then we'll dive into the maps and the video and get to what you're saying. All right. Something went down this week that I was just blown away by. And me being the business guy, it really caught my eye. It was big news in the marketing and advertising world, and not really associated with fishing, but there is a correlation there. And I don't know if either one of you two saw this, but there was a naming rights deal to an arena in Los Angeles, California, a 20-year agreement, forget this, $700 million.
Meaning a company pays $700 million to be called XYZ Arena.
Yeah. Crypto.com Arena. Dude, it's freaking cryptocurrency.
Yeah,
they're
well.
Spending $700 million just to have the Staples Arena named the Crypto.com Arena.
So it's no longer Staples Center?
Not anymore.
It's the Crypto Center?
Crypto.com Arena. Now, my question, Frank, and you being a marketing guy and a business guy, dude, explain to me how these companies would get more to the bottom line. And it's all about the bottom line.
It always is.
Being profitable, making money. How in the heck are they going to gain $700 million by just having their name on the arena? Wouldn't they be better off to take just a portion of that, say $7 million, and throw it into the bass fishing world and get everybody to, number one, educate the angling and fishing communities on what exactly cryptocurrency is.
Which I don't have a clue.
That's a totally different discussion. But the point that I'm trying to make is for these companies to spend almost $1 billion just to have their name on an arena. Where's the fishing industry missing the boat, dude?
In numbers of advertising, more people are going to see that name of the marina during a sport event, you know, during the year of football, for example, or whatever, basketball
whatever. Hockey, whatever they have at that arena.
The viewing audience is much larger and much more diverse as far as, you know.
See, there it is right there, dude.
Yeah.
So you want like a minor league wrestling venue in Mississippi to be named the Flash Mob Junior Center?
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is this, I don't know where these decisions are coming. Is this going to stimulate consumer behavior by spending $700 million?
Well, that alone should tell you what their projections are to earn, because they're basing this off, they base marketing off of a percentage of revenue.
It's a 20-year deal.
Right.
20 years.
Yeah. Okay. So 20 years. Okay. So
that's so much money.
It's a ton of money, dude. But that's letting you know how much they believe they're going to make.
Oh my gosh.
And what if
I was,
what if they go, what if they go out? What if they go out of business? Not that, you know, cryptocurrency is confusing to me. I think it's all made up anyway, but what if they go out? Then what happens to their, you know, 20-year deal?
So my question, and then we'll move on, but I was just blown away by that, Frank, is will the fishing industry, both the tournament industry and the retail industry, how long do you think it's going to take? I mean, heck, you said you don't even understand it. I barely understand it.
Yeah, no.
When is this industry going to get involved in the crypto world?
Dude, I am. That's a question I don't know, man.
I don't either.
How would the fishing industry get involved?
Your earnings are paid in cryptocurrency.
Yeah, but what? But that's, see, to me, that's made up, dude. Look, I got play money here. I'm gonna call it lure net money, and then everybody can sign up and get their lure net dollars.
I know, man. It blew me away. Anyway, we're gonna move on. But that is ridiculous amounts of money to something that I don't think the general population even understands.
Do you have a diagram? Well,
this is going to be part of the education program.
A name on an arena? But are you kidding me?
No, they're going to follow it up. They're going to follow it up with more marketing explaining what's going on.
No.
So they're going to educate throughout this course of time. But I'll tell you, the crazy thing is they believe they're going to make a ton of money, because that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. All right,
I want a crypto sponsorship.
That's what I'm saying. I want to see who the first angler out there that's going
to. Who would you even contact to be like, hey, wrap me with crypto? Like,
Bitcoin. Bitcoin. Who's going to be the first guy to represent Bitcoin?
Bitcoin Pro?
Or crypto.com?
How would you even approach that? Are there even real people behind that?
Yes.
Like, I mean, they obviously have a marketing budget.
Well, yeah.
Absolutely,
no kidding,
dude.
A monstrous one at that.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll see. I am intrigued by this whole deal. I want to see who the first, if there is ever going to be a professional angler involved with the whole cryptocurrency positioning in the fishing marketplace. And we'll see where it goes. But dude,
that'll be a great sponsorship.
Yeah. All right. So there, we just threw out an idea. Go get your $700 million and put your name on your jersey. There you go.
Hey, I could save them a lot. I could save them a ton of money. Sponsor me to come back, and all I want is $3
million. Oh, jeez.
Did you just announce you're fishing all nine opens, Frank?
Yeah. Crypto.com right there.
Yeah. If they contact me and pay me money, I'll go back.
Wow. All right, man. That's enough of that. That was just silliness to me, honestly.
It's kind of cool, though.
It is kind of cool, but, man, what a lot of money. All right, man, let's talk about what you got and what you sent to me, and let's dive right into it, dude.
Okay, we did a Flash Mob Junior show last winter, and it was fairly detailed. So here's what I got coming out. On LureNet YouTube, or YouTube LureNet, I don't even know how to say it, LureNet YouTube.
Okay.
So
there you go.
Is that good? That's good.
That's good. Okay.
Go to the LureNet channel on YouTube.
There you go.
Okay. Go to the LureNet channel on YouTube. Okay.
There you go.
So anyhow, I have
like, share, and turn on post notifications. Okay. Now continue.
Yeah.
And remember to like it. So,
come on, man. Jeez.
All right, I'm sorry. We all right. digress.
All right, here we go.
So I have a series of videos coming out. How to fish a flash mob junior, and where to fish a flash mob junior, and how to rig it. Okay? Real simple. But today, in today's show, the thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you the fastest way to isolate possible winter holding areas on lakes near you. Okay. And this is a great, I'm going to just do this as quick as I can. Okay. So when you, okay, I don't even know where I'm starting. I don't even know where I'm starting.
You're all cryptoed out, man. Come on.
I am. I mean, you got me all jacked up. Okay. So the first thing I want to do is I'm going to look at a topographical map of the lake. Okay. And I'm going to look for big flats, large flats in the lake, potential spawning areas, et cetera. And everyone's going, dude, they don't spawn in the winter. No, they don't. But they also don't migrate 100 miles away from their spawning areas. So if you find the big spawning areas, you're close already.
Do I need to put that map up?
Yeah, put the spawning areas up.
Where it says spawning flats?
Yeah, it'll be the one.
Okay. Let me see here. There we go.
Okay. So you can see on the left corner of your screen, you got some really good spawning flats in there. You see that the flats come way out into the lake, and they're only 9 feet deep on their farthest part out. Okay. So this is a good area. So what I look for, if you see the steep contours, everywhere this flat makes swings and turns, the contour edges get super tight together. Okay, these are high percentage winter holding areas. All right, so that's a really good place to start. So what you would do is, the first thing I would do is I would keep my boat over deep water, throw towards the shallow water, count the flash mob down. Okay, then I'm going to start my retrieve nice and slow, but maintain a certain depth range. I don't want it to keep sinking unless I see bass suspending on my graph. Because here's the cool thing in the wintertime. On lakes with no grass, when you idle or graph through these areas, you will see two things. You will see suspending bait fish and or suspending bass. The reason this is critical is because if the bass are suspending in 15 feet of water, you want to count your flash mob down to about a 10 or a 12 count, because you don't want it going below the suspending fish. Huh. And then you reel it in to maintain that 10 to 12 foot depth range, because most of your suspending bass, well, they feed up. So if you're below them, they're not even going to pay attention to it. But if you're above them, they always feed up, so they'll see it. Okay. Now, conversely, if this was a grass lake, okay, the grass would grow out to its deepest point depending on water clarity. Okay. So let's, for simplicity's sake, because I don't know what lake this is, I just picked it. So let's say, for simplicity's sake, that the grass in this lake, because of water visibility, only grows down to 9 feet. So I know that as I get to where the contours start to slope off, that grass is going to start to peter down. Okay. So now what I do is I'm not paying so much attention to suspending fish, because most of them are going to be related to the grass. I'll cast the flash mob out, and this is really easy. I'll cast the flash mob out. I count it down till I hit the first piece of grass, and then I start my retrieve. And all I want to do is periodically touch a piece of grass. I don't want it to be dragging in the grass. I don't want it snagging up in the grass. That's how you know you're too far down. Okay. So grass lakes lend themselves to make this technique super easy, because you know you're wrong if you're dragging in 40 pounds of grass. you're wrong. You got to be just ticking it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's the spawning areas. Now, you can go to any other map you want. I don't care. Let's go to the sea spots. Go to sea spots.
Oh, I didn't know I could zoom that in. Wow, that's a different cool kind of feature.
Yeah, so sea spots will be a structure.
Frank cares nothing about the zoom. He wants the sea spots, Mark.
Oh, no, I care about the zoom. But as you know, I can't see the zoom. So it's, you know.
Okay.
All right, so basically what a sea spot is, and I call them sea spots,
yep,
that is it.
That's
so, yeah, because here's the holding areas. The X's are the holding areas. Those are your targets, okay? So what happens in sea spots, you'll have two structural elements that come out and form like a U or a C, okay? What happens in these places is the bass get the steep contours and they can find comfort in the guts that those create. When they want to feed, all they have to do is suspend up or sink back down if they're in a neutral mode. So the X's are where I would start. Now, sometimes I will put my boat, like if you look at the spot on the left, I might put my boat on the flat spot on the left finger and cast across the center of the gut. If I idle up that gut and see suspending fish in the middle of it, then I'm going to quarter cast across it, count it down, and bring it across the gut. Okay? That's a very, very key thing to remember. These dead-end guts, sometimes they get right in the middle of the gut, and they're in the middle. If you go to the video I sent you, I am fishing.
Here we go, folks.
Yeah. I'm fishing a dead end gut here, and I am actually casting across it. And so what happens is I count the bait down, I start my retrieve, and every fish that I caught came out of the center of it. But I couldn't get bit casting right up the middle. I had to cast across to get bit. So my casting angle became critical. And I'll tell you how critical it was. I literally did not move the boat, and I caught about 30 of these things.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah, and when I changed the angle of my cast, I didn't catch them. So what was going on was I was casting across this gut and literally catching fish like that and never moved the boat. I mean, it was crazy. But when I went to the center, because after I stopped catching them, this way, I wanted to change angles to see if I could catch more. And I started casting through the center of the gut, and I never got a bite. I had to cast across it to get the bite. And here's the irony. I went to the other side of it, and I didn't catch nearly as many as I did when I was on the right side of it. So when you come to these guts, you have to figure out what angle these fish want. It's not complicated, and it just takes a few casts to figure it out.
How aggressive is the bite, Frank?
They were knocking slack in the line.
Wow.
Yeah, they would hit it and the line would go slack. Sometimes I would reel it in and it would get heavy. You know what I mean? Now, here's the crazy thing. That particular day, I did not catch any double headers. I caught all single fish, but I barely had a fish under 4 pounds. It was, it was unbelievable. Now, usually when you find them concentrated like that, there's a possibility you can get three on at the same time or even more. Because as they bite the one pulse minnow, the other ones are going all goofy when he's fighting you in.
Oh,
and other fish come to pick off. They think it's easy prey. You know what I mean? And usually you can get more than one on the same cast, but that day I didn't catch. I only caught singles all day, but man, did I plow them. It was great. So now let's go to, let me see. I got dead end guts. I got
bluff ends.
Yeah. Did we do dead end guts? Yeah. We just,
yeah,
no, we didn't do, we did C's. Go to
we
a dead
C's.
End gut.
We did the kind of flats with the drop offs and we did the C's.
Do I have a dead end gut in there? Did I send it to you? It's kind of similar to a C, but it's,
Yeah, here
really,
it is.
It's here really it is. Where it's where a creek will meander into a big flat.
Is that it?
Yeah, yeah, that's okay. It. Okay, if you look at Circle A, in my opinion, Circle A is better than Circle B, but Circle B needs to be looked out because you notice that irregularity. Ooh, look at that zoom.
I know, man. I didn't even know I had that feature.
That's sweet. So you'll notice that little irregularity, that bump that sticks out where the gut makes a little hook on both of them. Okay, one gut's 12 feet deep, one gut's 20 feet deep. Okay, these are dead-end guts. They're really, it's really just a cut that goes into a flat and then peters out. Those are funnels. They're stopping points. Those fish winter in there. They don't have to go anywhere else. They go in and it stops, and that's their home for the winter. These are some of my favorite places to flash mob junior fish. These are my all-time favorite places because it lures the fish in. They have plenty of water. They have good vertical breaks. There's huge flats. And if there's grass, it's even better. But this is not just specifically for grass. This could be open water or grass. But if it's grassy, it's better. I like fishing grass better than open water. That's just my personal preference. Nothing. It's not right, wrong, or indifferent.
But these are spots where if you don't have your graph on and you drive past someone that's fishing these spots, it looks like they're just not out in the middle of the lake, but it looks like they're out in the middle of nothing, just hucking towards nothing.
Correct. 100%.
Yeah, like that's the hardest part, I think, is to realize you're, what, I mean, on that spot, you could be 10 or 12 cat, you could be 100 yards offshore.
Yeah, this particular spot here is about, you're about 100 to a little bit more than 100 yards offshore.
Which is a football field.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But if you notice in the mouth of gut A, there's 60 feet of water out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They're not going to winter in 60 feet of water. Although there are times when they will, mostly smallmouth, but they will, but for the most part, they're going to winter in that 12 to 25 foot deep stuff. Now, they might be over 30, 40, or 50, but they'll be suspending. They won't be on the bottom.
Are you going to idle this, make sure it's accurate, everything, before you fish it? Or, like, let's say you're taking your application to a lake, and you're like, okay, this is what Uncle Frank said. This is what it looks like. This is right. Are you going to fish it to figure it out, or are you going to idle it, get a feel for it, and then fish it when you're trying to find these new areas?
Yeah, no, I'm gonna do a quick pass idling. Basically, I'll try to run up the center of the gut, see what's suspending out there, and then I'll turn around, drop my trolling motor, and I'll start trolling around using my front locator to see more detail because I can slow down with the trolling motor and be more quiet when I get to the shallower water. When I'm idling over, 20 feet or 30 feet, the motor doesn't bother me. But when I'm getting up into that, 12 to 9 foot range, I don't really want to run the outboard over it.
So ideally, let's say this is a productive gut A.
Yes.
Let's say you haven't fished it. You, and I don't want to get you off topic here, but I think this helps. What are you going to see to where you're going to turn to the guy next to you and be like, it's on? Ideally, in a perfect world.
Ideally, what I'm going to see is I'm going to see bait fish probably suspending somewhere between, 12 and 15 feet. If I don't, they might be a little bit deeper. But if I see the bait ball suspending in this gut, the bass will not be far away from them. If I see the bass, I'm like, okay, this is game time. I'll stop the boat right there, shut it off, spin around, and I'll start fishing it. Because if you see the bass, there's no secret. They're there.
Okay, let me ask you this, Frank. Hang on a sec. Can you see the mouse?
Yeah.
See the mouse? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
For the beginner to moderate weekend angler, all right, if they look at this and they had no idea about the stuff that you had circled, a common place to look would be right off these points where you get this 17 to 23 foot.
Correct.
Okay, that is just a knowledge thing that people assume because of the point structure and because that's where the depth gets to that 20-foot mark. They look at that, but they overlook truly where the juice is, where you have the circles, correct?
Yeah, 100%. Now, they might pick a fish off that point or two.
Yeah.
But when you're talking numbers, like I'm going to go out and catch 30 or 40, you need to go where the circles are because those are places that will harbor more bass. Remember, the bigger the flat, the more the bass, okay? So what happens is you have these immense flats that come out, and then you have that gut that cuts right through the middle of them.
Yeah.
Those are huge holding areas. And here, I'll tell you guys something. I did a video on a suspending rogue last spring, and the ice was just left the lake. In fact, some of the pockets still had ice on them the day I did the video. You would be so surprised how fast those fish are already at the spawning areas, because every bass that I caught was in 4 feet of water and they were in shallower dead end guts, just like the ones you're looking at, but on spawning flats. And I plowed them that day too. And I'm telling you, guys don't understand, especially lakes that freeze, how fast those bass get to the spawning areas. Because winter time, when a lake freezes, that's when it's the most stable of all.
Huh.
Once that ice gets on the lake stabilizes and it's more stable than any other time of the year.
Makes sense. Now, a lot of people, a number of people are asking for this and what we're looking at right now. What is the best water temps to look for and really when does it become effective? From a water temp standpoint.
Okay, so here's what I've noticed, okay? I've wrecked them when the water temperature gets below 60, and I've wrecked them when the water temperature is 38 and 39 degrees.
Wow.
What happens is it's just going to depend on the weather conditions leading up to your winter, okay, going into your early winter. If you have mild, stable conditions versus, you know, as Matt said, tornadic conditions. If you have mild, stable conditions versus, you know, heavy winds, tons of rain, tons of snow, and it's just volatile, it takes a little bit longer for everything to settle down. So it's all predicated on weather.
Okay.
Like I wouldn't hesitate to check those places the minute the water temperature gets into the 50s.
Okay, let me ask you this. Typically, and somebody wanted to know, I can't remember on the comments there, how do the fish position in circle A? Are they facing normally what direction? Towards the land or toward the deeper water?
Okay, so here's what happens. They will, if there is grass in the lake, they will be on the deepest, greenest grass.
Okay.
If there is no grass in the lake, they will suspend, usually underneath the bait fish. And they're really not, suspending bass are really not just looking any one way or another, unless there's current present.
Right.
If there's current present, they will always be facing into the current. Okay, but if this lake had current in it, those guts would be an eddy. Those guts would break the current. Okay, so you would have little to no current in there. You would have, you know, a swirling effect essentially. And so the bass really, that's why earlier I said change your casting angles a lot. Because what I found is that one directional cast might lead bites where another direction might not get bites. So when I come into situations like that, especially if I see the fish on my locator, I start casting and changing my angle. Sometimes I put my boat in the deepest part of the gut and cast up. Sometimes I go to one side and cast across. Sometimes I put my boat shallow, cast deep, and bring it up, you know, up. So it just depends. And that's the part that's tricky, because that changes constantly. So that's really your main focus. Once you find these areas, you see the bait, you see the bass, or in fact, the grass, it's up to you to figure out the casting angle. Don't be afraid. Before I put the boat shallow, I fish shallow. I cast shallow and work my bait across the openings. If that's not working and I still see the fish down there, then I put my boat shallow and cast out deep. And that way, this way, what's happening is they're going to trigger on an angle. And it's just like structure fishing with big crankbaits like DD22s and Fat Free 7s. I change my angle on the structure because one angle is going to produce. And once you figure that angle out, now you're on the money. And it's the same thing with the Flash Mob Junior, especially these structural elements. Now, there's a lot of lakes in the, you know, Tennessee area, Alabama area, where bluffs become a thing. So I think I have a bluff.
Yeah, I've got it queued up here. Let's see.
Okay. So here's the main key with a bluff. Okay. You can see that bluff end where Mark's cursor is. If Mark, you run your cursor straight to the end of that point.
Yeah.
To the point in the middle of the circle.
Oh, okay, right here.
Where the 14-foot mark is. So you see...
Right here.
Yes, you see the current is going from right to left because that's how it formed that point. So now you see, really, okay, the inside of that is going to be a current eddy. It's going to be a break in the current. When lakes have current, bass like to winter out of the current, okay? So that little tiny gut that makes on the inside of this little...
Where the bluff, X is.
Yeah, where the X is.
The third
are.
X, the point, I guess, of the... Right.
Correct.
Right here.
No. Nope. Nope. Yep.
Right there.
That one?
I lost your cursor, but it doesn't matter. So so you're going to see the little...
Right gut. There. I'm sorry. There it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, there you
right
go. There. You're going right to see the little gut that it creates. Okay, same difference. That's out of the current. It's got plenty of super deep water right next to it. Bass don't have to go far to feed up or down. Okay, and a lot of times what happens is the bait fish stack in these areas. So it's a very high percentage spot, very high percentage spot, especially on lakes with current.
All right, here's a question real quick. Let me get my... mouse working here. Mark, ask Uncle Frank why the Flash Mob Junior and not the standard Flash Mob size.
Okay, that's a really good question. And this is going to be insane, okay? I just love the Flash Mob Junior. There's no... Okay. The regular Flash Mob gives me the ability for much larger swim baits. So if I'm in a region or a lake where I know that there's opportunities for 8, 9, and 10 pound fish, I'll have both on. I'll have the regular Flash Mob and the Flash Mob Junior on, because sometimes they prefer a smaller bait fish size. So on the Junior, I usually throw the 3.5 pulse minnow. On the big Flash Mob, the regular Flash Mob, I'll throw the big pulse minnow. I think it's 4.5, and I'll throw the big money minnow, which is, you know, 5.5 incher.
Yeah.
It's just a different presentation. Okay. And the other thing that I didn't mention is, let's say I find the fish and they're suspending in 30 feet of water. You generally put two heavier, jig heads on the bottom too, and then lighter ones around the top. It'll keep the Flash Mob from rolling on you, and it'll give you the ability to count it down accurately a foot per second.
Typically, what weight, Frank?
I always start out with eighths. Unless I'm fishing super shallow, then I go to 16ths. And if I'm fishing really deep, then I'll have 2/4 and then eighths on the tops.
Okay. A couple people are wanting to know rod and reel setup. I know we discussed this last year, but real quick, what's the best setup?
I can rip through that. Okay, my favorite is a 7.5 foot medium or medium heavy. I'm throwing Powell's. I throw the Endurance 764. I generally throw 17-pound fluoro. I have fished them on braid, but I just like the fluoro better for some reason, and I'm not sure. I can't tell you why. I just have more success throwing it on 17-pound fluoro. Going lighter than 17 scares me a little bit because you always have the opportunity for multiple bites on the same bait. And so I want to make sure that, you know, the 17 sufficient.
Huh.
How do you, I have not ever in a key situation doubled up on the rig. I know a lot of people have. Is that something that you can do things to increase your double hookup rate to at one time? Because I feel like I stink it. I mean, I've caught white bass doing it. I've caught little ones, but everyone you see is like, oh, here's a couple 4-pounders. Are you doing anything different when you think that there's a lot of fish in the area to try to get two on one cast?
Yeah, I put two different colors on my bottom two baits. So, like, let's say I'm running Houdini on the top three. Or the middle one and the top two, I run Houdini on. The bottom two, I might run Blue Pearl. I want a little bit of a color difference. Or conversely, I'll run one different color on the long center pin and four of the same colors on the skirt, you know, on the outside of it.
But you think that helps you catch two on one cast more?
What I think it does is it elicits the strike. I've seen where a lot of times I'm catching them on the, when I catch one, I'm catching them on the drop back one, or I'm catching them on the two different colored ones on the bottom. Now on my multiple, what happens is the multiples come into play when one fish grabs the whole rig and is fighting and the other baits are doing all this crap because it looks like minnow's trying to get away. And so that's where you get the multiple strikes. I just think that your feeding situation hasn't been, you know, applicable. Okay. Because I know where I, like one day Frankie and I went out, I don't even know how many we caught, 40 or 50 of them. And we had doubles going.
But not like hooking it up and then just letting them mess around out there. Because I mean, if I'm fishing in a tournament and I'm winching that thing in, should I be sticking them and then letting them before I start bringing them in, or should I be slowly reeling them in? Like, I'm trying to up my doubles. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Uncle Frank?
If you hook up and you leave them out there and keep letting them fight, you'll get doubles. You will get doubles. You run the risk of losing fish, though. But you will get doubles. Because as they're fighting around down there, the more they fight down there and you're not taking them out of the school, the more your chances of doubling up become way better, way better.
Frank,
like I've never caught five.
Never, no. Hey, that reminds me. It's related, but it's kind of not related. But I remember my dad and I used to go rock cod fishing on Long Beach, and you would have five hooks on your line, and then you'd have this special attachment that was on this rod that you set it on the rail, and you'd sit there, and the rod would like that, and go, okay, that's one. You know, and then it'd go again. That's two. And you would hook up five rock cod and winch that thing in, and they'd all be about 3 or 4 pounds.
Rig, I think.
It was pretty amazing. It was a lot of fun, man. That's crazy. I can't imagine catching five on a rig like that. Jeez.
Well, there's so much that has to go right on that. You have to have five around in the area, and then how many times do you have them, whether you got them one in a dorsal fit? Like, you would have to, it has to be absolutely perfect, because a lot of times they'll get tangled up with each other. You'll have one fish that eats two of them. You'll get a tail or a dorsal fin with one of the backup ones. Like, it has to be it's a 1 in a million shot.
It's a perfect storm, but it happens. I mean, it really happens. You know, it's a great effective winter tool, but I'm going to be honest with all of you. That's not the only bait I have in the wintertime, because I always mix it up. Okay. Because I'll have my suspending rogues, you know, I modify a 24A bomber. I'll have that on, sometimes a crankbait. And I've caught them on crankbaits the same time I'm catching them on the flash mob in water temperatures 39 degrees. So you just got to remember you're fishing for suspended fish. So when you're doing a crankbait thing, you have to know exactly how deep that bait is getting.
All right, here's a question real quick. Do you change the clips out to O-rings?
The clips?
Yeah, just put an O-ring instead of the swivel or the snap swivel.
Yeah.
To where you're putting it, you basically can't change it then. You're putting just, it's just an O-ring directly connected. I think Tactical Bass and some of the guys do that to where you
have, No. No, I just leave the clip on it. The only modification I do to the Flash Mob and the Flash Mob Junior is I put a split ring on the line tie and I put a small crane swivel on the split ring. So I'm tying to the crane swivel. What that does is that just eliminates line twist down the road. The hardware doesn't matter. I mean, they don't care about that hardware.
All right. Bruce wants to know, do you glue the swim baits on the jig heads and the center pin spring?
Yeah, I do. I'll use a drop of Gorilla Glue on them.
Okay.
And stick them up there. The thing I hate the most is when they foul up on me because it's a wasted cast, and I lose my mind when that happens.
All right, let me run this by you because this is currently happening. So I got a buddy who's really good on the A rig, like really good. I fish a couple team tournaments with him a year. I'm 100% 20 to 25 pound fluorocarbon guy. Both throwing Flash Mob Juniors, exact same. I mean, we have the rigs dialed in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, over the last 2 years, I think we fished four. He's outfished me in all four, probably 2 or 3 to 1.
Wow.
And here's how he's done it. He throws that sucker on straight braid. I throw the fluorocarbon. He is a diehard believer that on the straight braid, that the fish, especially on longer casts, and this is just his theory, I want to get your thoughts on it because I'm a fluorocarbon guy, that on the longer cast, you've got so much metal wire anyway, they're dialed into it, that when you stop it, when you twitch it, that the baits and the blades and the wires are way more responsive with zero stretch, so you get more of a jerkbait pulse, stop, quick twitch action that elicits strikes, whereas the stretch of the fluorocarbon is a little more dull, so it's harder to elicit a reaction strike with the fluorocarbon than it is with the braid. I didn't believe him, but after fishing with him the last 4 or 5 times, I have now made sure that I have an A-rig, a Flash Mob Junior, rigged up with straight braid. And especially when you're fishing docks or something, you know, he'll stop it and just pop it as it goes past that dock and believes that flash is much greater and elicits more strikes than it is a fluorocarbon. Does any of that make sense to you? And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it makes sense to me. You know, his reel speed might be different than yours. His rod action might be a little different than yours because the rod action matters. And so does the reel speed matters. I also have fished tandemly, one with fluoro, one with braid. And I was on Lake Norman with a buddy of mine who is also crazy on the Flash Mob Junior. And I was throwing braid, and he was throwing straight fluoro, and he whooped my ass. And so I said, I better rethink my game plan. So then I went out, and I did both braid and fluoro. I fished both of them. I alternated because I was in full-blown experimental mode.
That's how I am, too.
Yeah,
and right I now. Found that I'm getting more bites on the fluoro. But I still have the one with braid, mm-hmm. because if I'm fishing and someone's throwing braid and they're beating me, I'm pulling the braid. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There is a fact to the quiver and the shake, because if I get one that misses it, and Frankie's really good at this. Frankie's really good at it. When he gets one that misses it, he pulls it, he quivers it, he shakes it, he pulls it, and bam, he gets it again. You know what I mean? Some guys just have a knack for that. You know what I mean? Some guys just have a knack for it. I think personally, the reason that he's doing better than you on the braid is because the braid diameter is way thinner than 20 or 25 pound fluoro. I think if you go to 17 pound fluoro, you'll get the same fall rate he's getting on 50 pound braid.
Fall rate. So you think his bait might be getting deeper to where I'm way up higher in the water column and
100%.
He's able, because we're using the same reel retrieves.
Hmm. Yeah, 100%.
Interesting. I never even thought of that. So my bait, because
your
of that
bait's higher in the water column. Yeah, 100%, okay. Dude. That's why I don't use 20 or 25 on it. Because what, unless now, conversely, let's say you are dock fishing with it, okay, and there might be brush piles and stuff, and you might need that heavy line so you could straighten your hooks out and get the bait back. But for the most part, the only thing that I can see in your setup versus his setup is his fall rate's different. Because
that's 100%. Because I was like, well, you know, the last time we were there, I'm like, I'm critically watching how he's fishing it, and we're fishing it the same. But I never thought that even though fluoro sinks and braid floats, you're talking about a much smaller diameter
way
in the braid
smaller.
That he's throwing. So his his baits are getting down deeper than mine. So.
And staying there, by the way, because you guys might have the same retrieve. You might be doing the same thing. He's
Which
got a thinner line diameter, so it's cutting the water better. Yep. It's not doesn't have nearly as much drag.
Yeah.
20, 25-pound fluoro, you might be reeling it the same way, but your line has so much more drag in the water, it's bringing your flash
That model. Answered my question. That's it. And if I had gone lighter, I probably would be like, oh, the line shot. No, you're getting it down there to where they are. Because they're not not super shallow fish. I mean, they're 15-foot down.
Yeah. And they're not line shy, dude.
No, not at all.
Look at all the metal on that bait and they're eating it.
That answered my question.
Yeah. You're welcome, Matt.
There you have it. Real quick, did the rod that you mentioned, does it have a little bit more tip?
Yeah.
Okay.
It does. I experimented with that too. I have to be honest with you because I'm like a freak. When I get on a technique, I want it to be the most 100% foolproof I can make it. So I experimented with the rods. Now I have a Powell rod, a 765. It's a little bit stiffer and than the 764, but I fish it and I don't have the same feel with it. So I always go back to that 764 because I can feel more with it. Not saying that one's right or wrong. Cause if I had five heavy heads on, the 765 would be 100% adequate, but I like to throw the lightest heads I can get away with. So I only start getting big heads on those things when I need to get it deeper and deeper and deeper.
All right. Man, that's really, really good stuff. And for those folks that just came in late, you need to go back, either watch it or listen to it, because especially with the diagrams, that is some big-time juice when it comes to doing this pattern and really kind of getting it dialed in. Because I think that's what everybody tries to do. And when you do get it dialed in, that's when the confidence starts to build. You know, somebody asked that, how do you build confidence with this rig? Well, you catch fish.
So along the confidence line, this is why, and you're up in Ohio, we're down in Oklahoma, we see how they throw it all around the country. But would you say confidence-wise, if you're going to start a 3.5-inch to 3 3/4-inch bait on a 3/16 to a 1/4-ounce head on the Flash Mob Junior, you can't go wrong with that. Like, that will catch big fish. It will catch small fish. You will not be using bait. I mean, obviously, like I said, there's outliers, but if you're just getting into it, 3.5-inch bait, 3/16, 1/4-ounce, Flash Mob Junior, eighth, natural shad colors, you have the right setup to catch fish. It might not be the absolute dialed in for yours. And after you said there's changes where 6 inches are better, or 2.8 is going to be better. But day in and day out, that's it. That's the size.
Day in and day out, my starting is a 3.5 pulse minnow. I like Houdini shad. I like blue pearl. Day in and day out, that's what I start with. As the day progresses, I might be changing based on how my bites are coming or what kind of fish I'm into. But for the most part, if you set up like that, you can't go wrong, because every fish that swims eats those little things.
All right. And then, so this is the only thing. So, Jeffries, you've been a big, I've seen you, you've been a big Alabama rigger. You enjoy doing that.
Yeah.
I've seen his rigs. He's got money minnows that are skewed on there sideways. They've got a little kink in them. I've seen it. Now, I don't know if that's just a thing where you got some guys who, you know, a plastic, a flapper's a little off and they don't care and they catch them the same. But in your opinion, how important is perfectly straight, perfectly swimming, tracking swim baits on that thing as opposed to I've caught a couple, you got one that's a little wonky and it's out here doing a chicken wing as opposed to do all tracking and tight on each other?
Well, for those of you who've watched all 40 whatever episodes of Day Four, you all know I am like, I have OCD, so if my stuff isn't straight and perfect, I'm tearing it off and redoing it. Yeah. And I'll waste five of them things to get one perfect. I don't care.
I'm a lazy old man, Frank.
Well, here, look, if you somebody asked me, why is the Flash Mob Junior such an effective Alabama rig when there's so many other Alabama rigs out there? That Flash Mob Junior, the wires on that thing pulse. So what happens is when you're reeling it in and you pull it a little bit, because I change my retrieve speed a lot, you pull it a little bit, those arms come in and it looks like schools of minnows. You know how when you see schools of minnows swimming, all of a sudden they come together and then they go out and they come together and then they go out. That Flash Mob Junior is 100% looks like that in the water. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I don't think it can be beat. Now, I've used other Alabama rigs where the head screws on and the wires stick out nice and straight out, and you don't have to bend them or anything. Yeah. They don't behave at all like that.
Okay,
they're very stiff in the water. You just got five baits and they're going, eh. Where that Flash Mob, those things are, they're always doing stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That bait is sexy. And here, I don't bend the wires with a hard bend either. I use my thumb and I roll the wire over my thumb so it's a soft curve. Because, you know, with anything, it's wire. So the more you bend it, eventually it's going to break because it's wire. I mean, how many times have you been on a hellacious spinnerbait bite, and the next thing you know, you lose a fish that the head breaks off or the R-bend breaks?
Right.
Because the fish are constantly straightening it out. Now, most of the time, you know, when I smallmouth fish with the spinnerbaits and you're catching 4 and 5 pound smallmouths on the thing, you'll catch three and that bait will be as straight as an arrow. I cut it off and tie another one on because I'm not playing. You know what I mean? I'm not playing.
But. All right. We're running out of time here, but I need to mention one more thing that in all of our A-rig stuff that Uncle Frank hasn't really talked about that I think is probably the most as far as ease of use, enjoying throwing an A-rig and getting the proper action out of a 3.5-inch bait. And that is finding a quality, shorter shanked jig head. You get a longer shank on your jig head. You're compromising your action because now you're straightening a bait and getting more of just a tail kick than a roll in the body. And any swim bait fisherman knows how important the roll is. And with that bait swinging around, you have less hook, less area for the other tails to swing around, get hooked on that A-rig, especially if you're throwing it in the wind. And when they're eating it, they're typically coming back up behind it and engulfing it. So you're getting better action with less tangle. That's that's an ever-evolving, is finding a quality, short-shanked jig head that doesn't have too heavy of a gauge that fits a 3-inch swim bait. And it drastically improves the enjoyment level of throwing a multi-wire rig.
My perfect jig head for that is the Yum 1/8-ounce jig head. It's got a short shanked hook in it. It's a little black head and it's flat. You know, it's flat. It's not a ball head. It's flat. It keels so good. And that little Flash Mob, when it swims, it just wiggles and jiggles all over the place. It's a really one of my favorite heads to throw. Actually.
Very nice.
And the hook's nice. It's needle sharp. It's a black nickel hook. It's fantastic.
Very nice. All right.
Oh, wait.
What?
I forgot. On LureNet, Black Friday sales have started. There's tons of stuff for sale, lots of Booyah stuff for sale. It's going to go till the 29th of November. Yeah. Things are coming up for sale every day on LureNet. Stay on it because there's some great stuff coming down the pipe.
All right, real quick, last question, and then we'll wrap this up. I got a couple things that I want to ask you. But real quick, water clarity, how important is that? Clear or better?
I like clear, moderately stained to clear better for the deep water applications. Early in the wintertime when the bass are still bank related to a degree, and you could go down and throw the flash mob like a spinnerbait, that doesn't concern me too much. But it's just when I'm structure fishing with it and I'm grass edge fishing, I want a little cleaner water.
All right. Dude, what color is your wall? Is that red or maroon or crimson or what is that?
This is a maroonish colored wall.
Dude, now since they don't have the Staples Center anymore, they have the Crypto.com arena, you could get a big red Staples sign in back of there. Maybe they're looking for some sponsorship, dude.
Yeah,
that red
bring it
just
on.
Flashing.
Yeah, red. Red is good.
It's flashing good. Away. Oh, which reminds me, I wanted to ask you real quick. Dude, I'm still irritated by that whole, I can't believe somebody would spend $700 million. Anyway, I need to move on.
you're getting down the rabbit hole.
I'm just, that really, really bothers me for some reason. Anyway, I am a red freak. That staple sign. I mean, red is the most attractive color as far as catching your attention
to angry people
in marketing. Well, right. Right.
Well, it is. And, red's also a good spring color.
It is. All right. So let me see if I can find this real quick. I got to hang on. There's my Staples crypto deal.
And that is not red. That is blue.
For those of us who are
colorblind.
No, hang on. I need to find it real quick because it was since we're talking about red, it wasn't the Staples sign, but it was really, really cool. And I really like the red stuff. I mean, that's what I beat. You remember how many crankbaits did I have on the deck of the boat when I finally beat you? They were red.
I don't remember.
Remember that one time?
I had four rods, dude.
I don't remember. What are you talking about?
A tin killer.
You're crazy.
Oh, geez. See? All right, hang on. Let me see if I can find it. All right, here. I think I got it. Hang on. This is...
Yeah, you had four.
And they were all red. All right, hang on. All right. I have not seen this. Is this... This is brand new, right?
Yeah, it's brand new in the paint shop. That color is Red Devil. I can't believe I should have brought it up.
It doesn't match your wall, though. I think make your wall that color.
Wasn't that your nickname in high school, Mark?
Red Devil? No.
No, this color is really this color is a fantastic color. I think that's a Bandit 100. Runs about 4 feet deep. Fantastic in the spring. And it's got the hot orange belly, the red sides. But the thing that I like about this is I like the contrasting gold. It's a really high metallic gold. And the black eyeballs and the black back really set this bait off. I mean, this is that's a really good color right there, especially for early spring.
Okay. 100 only, though. Dude, I like the 200, though.
Well, maybe they'll make it in the 200. I can't be I don't know what lures they're putting in this stuff.
This can be trolled to 8 feet, though.
It can be.
Oh, it can be?
It says it right there.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised, like in Canada, some of the shallow lakes, how many guys troll the Bandit 100 and the Bandit 200 for walleyes. It's unbelievable.
Huh.
Yeah, it's crazy.
The 9-4 that's on my wall that I caught when I was 17.
Yeah.
Bandit 200 in a crawfish pattern.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
Original pair, those pair hooks that they used to come with.
Hey, real quick. Hey, Austin on the comments. Dude, we talked about that. And if you don't recall what Matt and I said about the NPFL situation, go back and listen to the show. All right? I'm giving them every opportunity to come on this show and explain what's going on. So
we set our peace.
Yeah. We're moving on. You know, if they want to come on, they can come
moving
on.
Moving on. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Open invitation. Now, are you a turkey dressing, pumpkin pie, cranberry sauce, stuffing kind of guy?
Okay. Here's the thing. growing up, Thanksgiving was rabbits, grouse, deer. My wife's side of the family, it's all about the turkey.
What?
Just went out and just walked through the forest and got.
What are you talking about?
Rabbits,
Frank?
Grouse, and deer instead
of
turkey.
I'm telling you what Thanksgiving was when I was younger.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm telling you, I never had turkey on Thanksgiving.
Interesting.
That sounds my wife's awesome.
my wife's side of the family does turkey. That's when I started eating it. You know, eating it for Thanksgiving, and then my weak spot is pumpkin pie, dude. I could eat a whole one by myself.
Huh.
Yeah, I'll smash it. I like it. I put it in the refrigerator, get it nice and cold,
yeah.
And then I'll sit up and watch a movie, eat pieces of that, because when it's cold, you can just hold it, and it stays, you know. And then I'll just drink my beer and eat pumpkin pie and watch movies until the pie's gone.
Very nice.
That's my weak spot, yeah.
Well, man, I know a lot of fans out there definitely wish you a happy Thanksgiving, and you and your family enjoy. I know you've got kids coming in town, right?
I can't. I can't wait. My kids are so much fun. I can't. You know, I'm lucky because my kids are a lot of fun. Sometimes a pain in the ass, but most of the time, really fun. And I love when they all come home. And we have a really good time. In fact, I'm getting too old for those kind of good times because they'll wear me out, man. We'll be up till 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, you guys, tomorrow's going to be a really bad day for me.
Wow. Frank Jr. called me.
Did he?
Yeah.
Sweet.
He's got some time off. He's going to be making basically a little loop around the country fishing. And I said, yeah, just let me know. I said, we'll get on some of them 2.5-pound crappie and we'll FaceTime Frank.
Yeah, you guys are rotten to the core, man. You guys are rotten. I want to get into some slabbers so bad I can't stand it. I got. In fact, Frankie and I are going out Friday. I got all my Bobby Garland crappie stuff. He's going to be pissed when we start crappie fishing and not bass fishing.
Wow. Well, dude, this was show number 44, and I can't thank you enough for getting involved with Matt and I and being part of this. I know the fans are pumped every Thursday when you roll into day four. So thank you, man. Have a great Thanksgiving. We will not – we're actually taking all of next week off for a Thanksgiving break. We will have, though, Matt, the link posted next week, right, for the Black Friday –
Yes.
BTL merch.
Not doing a show on Monday?
No show on Monday.
Oh, so okay. So that's back off. Okay, yeah. So yeah, we're not back till after Thanksgiving. Yeah, the link will be posted.
On BassZone.com.
Yep.
I have to thank you guys. Day four is one of my favorite things in the fishing world that I've ever done. I love it, and I have to thank you guys for that, and I want to say a happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Yeah.
LureNet Black Friday sales. You guys won't regret it.
All right, cool stuff. All right, Frank, man, enjoy the family. Have a great holiday. We will talk to you 2 weeks from today.
You got it.
All right, man, everybody out there, be safe. Matt and I will be back the Monday after Thanksgiving week. So check out BassZone.com, all the Black Friday stuff that we will have on the merch. And, Frank, man, be safe. Enjoy the holiday. We will talk to everybody. That's it. We're out of here.
See ya.